minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
And welcome to yet another edition of a Pack-A-Day podcast. We are back and better than ever here on Super Bowl Sunday. I'm your host, Jacob Westendorf, and reunited with Zach Jacobson. Zach, moving in, becoming an adult, all kinds of different stuff. How was your weekend?
It was busy. It was hectic. It was rainy. And yeah, that's kind of... It's a little unorthodox to say that, you know, being in Southern California and all, but, you know, it's really, really, really rainy. We're in, like, in the middle of a big storm here. I know, you know, kind of in that, towards your general direction, everything's kind of below zero, but I'll take the rain any day.
Yeah, it was below zero. Today we were in the 40s, and I was joking. I was like, this feels like summer. So all the snow and the slush and everything's melting. Between the next 3 days, we're going to be in, like, the mid-40s to the 50s. So... a 100-degree difference from what field temperature was like on Wednesday afternoon, which was about 58 below zero here in my hometown and colder around some of the areas. So we have survived the polar vortex, and now we are staring in the face of having to survive time without football. Today is the final game of the season. The New England Patriots will be taking on the Los Angeles Rams this evening. Zach, this is a Packers show, so I don't want to spend too much time on a Super Bowl that, frankly, I think the general consensus is everybody's tired of the Patriots, and I completely understand that. I think the casual fan will be rooting for the Rams this evening. I will be one of those people rooting for the Rams this evening, but I do like the Patriots. I think they win 27-20. Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, 6 Super Bowl titles. And neither one of them retire, which is the annoying part. So they'll be back next year, hopefully, for the Packers to be able to dethrone them in the Super Bowl, which Aaron Jones did say this week at the NFL Honors that the Packers are going to be in Miami next year. Guarantee it. Write it down. Aaron Rodgers said that Davante Adams was going to be busy next year during the Pro Bowl. So they seem to be shooting their sights high. So hopefully that's the case next year. But this year, it is the Rams. Zach, do you give them any chance to win this game?
Oh, yeah, they definitely have a chance. And, you know, I cannot stand the Patriots. Maybe not hate them, but I'm so sick of seeing them win. And I know everybody else would. Yeah, I know everybody else is, too. That's, like, the general consensus, like you said. Nobody wants to see them win anymore. But, when Brady and the Patriots, they made that big comeback against Atlanta a couple years ago, and Brady won his 5th ring, everything... Like, my soul just got sucked out of me, and all of my kind of vengeance towards the Patriots, like, went along with it. And I just kind of gave up. I gave up rooting against the Patriots. I gave up going against Brady and Belichick and assuming that they're going to collapse at some point and assuming that the inevitable downfall is finally going to happen. I'm just done. All right, Jacob? I gave up. All right, that was it. So I'm picking the Patriots to win 37-31.
That'll be entertaining. I respect it. I understand why you have given up on picking against the Patriots. I, myself, have done the same. I've won a lot of money in recent years picking the Patriots. Obviously, if they win, it'll be 2 of the last 3 Super Bowls. But the Patriots are just, they're a modern-day dynasty. They might be the greatest dynasty in the history of professional football. Their longevity, everything about it's annoying. But it's also admirable the way they've been able to. I mean, realistically, this is, what, 18 years running? The Patriots played in their first Super Bowl against the greatest show on turf, Rams. Kurt Warner, Marshall Faulk, Torrey Holt. I mean, there are guys on this. Well, Bill Belichick and Tom Brady are still here, and the other guys are not. That is incredible, even if it is annoying. Packers news. Well, I guess this isn't really Packers news because there's not a Packer involved, but the class of 2019 for the Pro Football Hall of Fame was announced today. Names include Champ Bailey, Pat Bowlen, Gil Brandt, Tony Gonzalez, Ty Law, Kevin Mawai, Ed Reed, and Jeremy Robinson. Zach, the name that is not in there is Leroy Butler. He was not a finalist, and I just made the joke on Twitter not that long ago that the Hall of Fame committee did not put him in on the Hall of Fame. John Lynch and Steve Atwater were two finalists, and I said they did not put those guys in because they know that Leroy Butler was a better player than both of them and deserves to be a finalist before both of those guys do. That's no disrespect to those guys. I remember when John Lynch was really good. I remember Steve Atwater playing in the Super Bowl for those late Broncos teams. I get all that. But Leroy Butler is a better player than both of them. He was on an all-decade team. He invented the Lambeau Leap. He was the first safety, really modernized the game with his ability to play both in the box and deep in coverage. He made difficult plays look routine. I think it was Dusty Evely today. One of our colleagues posted the GIF of Butler sacking Drew Bledsoe in Super Bowl 31. Not an easy play by any stretch of the imagination. He did it one-armed and threw him on the ground while being blocked. So, Zach...
Knocked out the running back, too.
Yeah, he took out the running back at the same time. I mean, it was incredible. So, tell me, Zach, why does Leroy Butler deserve to be a Hall of Famer? Because I just kind of gave his case there, but this is a guy that definitely deserves to be in my opinion. You tell me why that's the case.
Well, you look at Fritz Schirmer's defense in the 90s and what the Packers were able to do and how specifically in 96, they were just such a dominant force. They were basically unstoppable in every facet of the game, whether it's offense, defense, special teams. They were number one in all three categories. And, you know, Butler, he doesn't get much acknowledgement for that because, you know, he's playing on defense with Reggie White. And obviously, right. Reggie White, he's going to take a lot of maybe the credit for what that defense was able to accomplish. But Butler, he had more career interceptions than Lynch, than Atwater. I think Butler was sitting at 38, last I remember. But his numbers were just better. I mean, we all know the Hall of Fame committee, they base almost everything off of numbers and statistics. And sometimes it shouldn't be that way. Sometimes it should just be based entirely off of impact on a game, the overall impact a player has in a defense alone. And Butler, he was just a total ball hog. He hit hard. He commanded that defense. He was a big part of that defense up until the early 2000s. He was just and like you said, he even invented the Lambeau Leap. And still, to this day, players are still Lambeau leaping. You know, visitors who come to Lambeau Field, visiting players who come to Lambeau Field days before a game, they come, test out the field, and they do Lambeau leaps on the field. Like, this guy was like a pioneer.
Yeah, absolutely. Can't disagree. You know, you mentioned he played on a defense with Reggie White, and that's true. Reggie White's one of the greatest defensive players ever, maybe the greatest defensive player ever. There's certainly an argument to be made for that. Leroy Butler was the second best defensive player on that team and may have, by that point in his career, been the best one because this was toward the end of Reggie's career. I mean, this guy is a pioneer, like you mentioned. He invented the Lambeau Leap, and we're talking about a career. Honestly, he had all those numbers, and his career was cut short because he broke his shoulder in a Lambeau game against the Atlanta Falcons. So he may have played more and been able to accumulate more of those statistics that you're talking about. While I'm on my soapbox about Packers that deserve to be in the Hall of Fame, Sterling Sharp belongs as well. I don't know if that's ever going to happen because they use the abbreviated career excuse for him, but for some reason that excuse isn't valid for Terrell Davis, who got into the Hall of Fame. I mean, in general, I don't like to discuss the Hall of Fame a lot just because I think that it's so subjective and that writers pick and choose who they like the most, and that's who gets in. That's why Terrell Owens had to wait a year, even though he certainly didn't have to. He's certainly one of the Terrell Owens, for my eye, is the second best receiver I've ever seen play in his prime. Now, I caught the very tail end of Jerry Rice's prime as a younger guy. So Jerry Rice would be one, obviously. But since I didn't really catch all that, Randy Moss is one, Terrell Owens is two. And I could very easily be talked into thinking the other way around on that. But that's the Hall of Fame. You know, hopefully Leroy Butler can find his way in. You know, Jerry Kramer eventually got in. And hopefully Sterling Sharp can find his way in as well. As far as current Packers go, current and former Packers, I guess, this week, Zach, it seems like it happens once in offseason. I'm hoping that since it happened now that it'll just go away and we don't have to worry about it again. But the Aaron Rodgers is uncoachable and a bad teammate and hard to play with and blah, blah, blah. All that stuff came out this week from some familiar mouthpieces. JerMichael Finley, former tight end of the Green Bay Packers, and Greg Jennings. They were quoted in a story written by Rob Reichel about how they don't think that Rodgers and Matt LaFleur marriage is going to work because Rodgers wants to be coached, but only to a certain point, and eventually he wants to run the show. And if Matt LaFleur tries to coach him too hard, Aaron will check out. The other guy quoted in that story that was a little surprising and a little different was Kabir Gabaja Biamila, better known as KGB, the previous all-time sack leader in the history of the Green Bay Packers. That honor obviously now belongs to one Clay Matthews. But they all kind of essentially said the same thing. Zach, this happens every year, and I don't know why people don't just, especially when it comes to Finley and Jennings, it's the same stuff, and it's in one ear and out the other. For me, I think they play to the camera. And the other example I can give is this. That story came out, I believe, on Thursday night. That morning, I was listening to JerMichael Finley on my Sirius radio. He was on Adam Shine, Shine on Sports Show, which airs from 9 to noon on Sirius XM Mad Dog Radio. And JerMichael Finley could not stop gushing about Aaron Rodgers. He said he was his biggest fan, loved playing with him, great teammate, consummate player, always tried to get us going and all that sort of stuff. And then 10 minutes later, a story comes out about how Rodgers is a piece of garbage and a bad teammate. So to me, Jennings and Finley have made a name for themselves in the off seasons of just trashing the current Packers quarterback. And the national media and your shock jocks, guys like the dude from FS1, who's on in the mornings with Shannon Sharp, whose name I never utter, Colin Cowherd, people like that pick that up and they eat that crap up. And then they basically ignore David Bakhtiari, James Jones, Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb. Plenty of guys have come out and talked about the kind of teammate Aaron Rodgers is, the kind of player he is, the kind of person he is. And I don't know Aaron Rodgers. He very well could be a prima donna diva quarterback. He's a professional quarterback. Every single one of them, I would be willing to guess, is a prima donna. So, Zach, when stuff like this comes out, how do you deal with it, and what would your advice be to somebody who's like a casual observer, I guess, in terms of how to handle when somebody talks or when those two guys specifically have this conversation?
There's literally no way you can handle that. If you're just like a casual fan, you stumble upon this kind of thing, or you're just, you know, watching FS1, say, at your work or something in your break room, which I've been a victim of several times because I wasn't able to change the channel, so I've had to watch Ego Shall Not Be Named. They're mouthpieces, and you know, Finley, he's so hot and cold about his stance on Rodgers and his opinion. And you know, has anyone ever thought, you know, these vocal guys were pass catchers in Green Bay, guys who may or may not hold some kind of a grudge because maybe they feel like they didn't get the ball enough, you know, because they did play in a time in Green Bay when the Packers ran a lot of spread offense, a lot of five wide sets, and a lot of guys that they had to spread the ball to. Maybe Jennings felt like he could have done more with more targets. Maybe Finley felt the same. Maybe Finley has some, you know, a little animosity for the way his career ended. I don't know. But it's just guys like that play into the media. They feed into it. And you know, I'm sure there's obviously money involved, and I'm sure maybe these guys don't really feel this type of way about Rodgers. And like you said, we don't know him. He could be, for all we know, Rodgers could be a total dick. You know, like, we don't know the guy. But it's just asinine to disregard everything positive that everybody else says about Rodgers. His teammates, his friends, coaches, opponents, on the field. It was in a story, I can't remember, it was a Seahawks player in a story recently that I read that pretty much just an oral history of the 2014 NFC Championship game, and one of the Seahawks players was just talking about how casual and how friendly Rodgers was on the field, and how he was like screwing with the defensive players' minds. It was just like his casual, calm, polite demeanor was just getting under their skin and messing with their heads. Like, even opponents speak highly of this guy. But it's always the same two people. And KGB, that was just, like, he played one season with Rodgers in 2008. And KGB wasn't even really a starter that season. He succumbed to Colin Jenkins at his position. But either way, I just think if these guys are going to kind of feed into their little narrative of how Rodgers is just this diva, he's uncoachable, at least consider every aspect of the story. You know, take it in from all accounts. Don't just pick and choose what you want to kind of fuel your narrative. But I know that's what gets ratings on these types of shows, so it is what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is. I mean, if nothing else, these guys have made a nice post-career for themselves by making those stories out. And there's some go-to people. If somebody wants to write something relatively negative about the quarterback in Green Bay at this point, it seems like those are the guys that they call first. And that's fine. Personally, even if there's some truth to those things, I just don't think it matters all that much, because it appears that the guys in the locker room right now seem to really care about him. And quite frankly, we're not in, like I mentioned and you reiterated, we're not in the locker room every day. So we don't know. And to question Aaron Rodgers' leadership in general basically has no merit. I despise those kinds of stories in general, just because I think that anything that has come out for the most part lately from his teammates has been positive. So with that in mind, that's all I really care about. Speaking of narratives, another podcast aired this week on the reemergence of Jeff Janis. Jeff Janis joined a podcast. Our Lord and Savior has returned. It was, I believe, Wednesday night I heard this podcast, and I listened to it because there was some interesting stuff in there on how Janis felt about Mike McCarthy, how Janis felt about Aaron Rodgers. Here's some bullet points real quick in general. As far as Mike McCarthy went, he called the offense archaic. He said the players would question whether or not McCarthy was putting them in the best chance to win. He had some personal questions himself because Janis has, well, I mean, it was pretty well documented that, you know, anything that was basically said during that 2015 season by the Janis Hive, Janis pretty much reiterated, like, oh, I made plays when I was in the game. I thought I would get more chances, and I never did. And when he went to Aaron Rodgers, he was talking about, you know, his body language and how he thought he could have been a little more positive toward him and all those sorts of things. I don't put a ton of stock into it. I know, you know, one comment that was made during the podcast by the host, whose name at this point escapes me, so I apologize for that, but he said to him, like, Janis, you're better than Marquez Valdes-Scantling. And then, I mean, my response to that is, okay, if Janis is better than Valdes-Scantling, he left Green Bay, a situation that wouldn't give him a chance, wouldn't give him an opportunity. Cool. Why did he go to Cleveland and get cut by the end of camp, and why has nobody signed him since? Why is he out of the NFL?
Exactly what I was going to say.
Because if he is this talented and this huge stud that nobody would just ever give an opportunity to, there are plenty of bad teams in the NFL that could grab this dude and force-feed him targets if that were the case. And the Browns, at one point last year, were that exact situation. Janis couldn't get on the field. I think that I don't fully understand the need and the love and the – I mean, Janis was a special teams punt gunner, and he was really good at that. And you know what? He was drafted in the seventh round from Saginaw Valley State. No offense to that school, but it's a small school, and he's a seventh-round pick, which is essentially a preferred undrafted free agent. The Packers got their value 10 times over on Jeff Janis. He'll be forever in Packers lore for those two big catches against Arizona. But realistically, if he was that good, he would have gotten on the field. If not in Green Bay, even if I give you the fact that McCarthy basically misused him and never gave him a chance, okay, fine. Why hasn't he been picked up anywhere else? Zach, I know you said you only listened to bits and pieces of the podcast, but what was your response in general to the things that Janis or somebody else said?
Well, wait, was it the host that said Janis is better than MBS?
Yeah, the host said Janis was better than MBS.
Evan Silva, right?
I don't think Silva was the host. I'll have to double check that. I'll do that while you give your response, but I'll make sure that it whether or not it was him.
God, that's just a classic case of just like saying, just puffing up this guy's ego because he's on your show. Oh, you're such a great receiver. You're better than anything they have there now. You're so great. Please. Some of what Janis said has merit, and you know it's something that other players have alluded to at this point already. I mean, we saw Mercedes Lewis recently talk about how the offense was just bad for tight ends, and Martellus Bennett, who was there a year before Lewis, was essentially agreeing with him. You know, even as bad as he was, but. Yeah, and as you said too, Janis, he did get his opportunities, regardless of what all those cult followers from the 2015 season that kind of still flocked over the last couple of years, who still want to believe that Janis was just robbed of an opportunity in Green Bay. He got opportunities in 2016. He got opportunities in the preseason in 2016. In 2017, he didn't make the most of them. I think it was in the Colts game in 2016 when they came to Lambeau Field. He ran a go route. Rodgers chucked it deep. Pass hit him in the face mask. So I don't want to hear about how he didn't get any opportunities from anybody, or how he wasn't utilized properly. Like, it's just, that's such an uninformed take from anybody to say that. And that's coming from people who. The same people who said that he was better than Davante Adams. Those are the same people.
Yeah, I still can't believe those people exist. While you were talking, I was trying to look up who the host of that podcast was, and turns out it may very well have been Evan Silva, but I am blocked by Evan Silva now because so I can't look that up. But the reason I'm blocked by Evan Silva is because Peter Bukowski and Matub were asking for like Cliff Notes version of what was said on the podcast. And I basically said what I just said earlier. Silva responds to me and says, quote, LOL, so misleading. To which my response was, okay, what did I say that was misleading? Like, I would like to know. It was a genuine question. And 2 seconds later, I found out I was blocked. Oh, well, I'm not going to lose a ton of sleep over that. I didn't follow Evan Silva anyways. That's not to say he doesn't do great work or anything like that. It's just not somebody I was interested in, I guess I should say. So that is what it is. The Janis thing forever will be funny to me because, like you said, there were guys that said he was better than Davante Adams based on nothing. I mean, really, realistically, those people that were saying that were using nothing to support their theory, other than maybe some combine stuff, which, okay, cool, but then, like you mentioned, he gets his opportunity the next year to reprove himself, and when you get those opportunities few and far between, you have to take advantage of them. That's what Jordy Nelson did early in his career, for example. Randall Cobb, same thing. And, yeah, the lasting image that I have of Jeff Janis as a receiver, save for the Hail Mary, I should be fair, the Hail Mary obviously is up there, but otherwise, it's pretty much the deep ball down the left boundary that hit Janis right in the face. He was open. It would have been an 85-yard touchdown. It hit him in the face mask and fell incomplete. And that's going to be one of his lasting images. He's not in the NFL anymore. So the cult-like fan following, for reasons that I will never be sure of, I'm sorry that your hero is nothing special. Some little bit of Packers news that I do want to get to before we wrap up here at the end is Ian Rappaport reported this week that Jimmy Graham's roster bonus is likely to be picked up and paid out in March. So the Packers are very likely to keep Jimmy Graham around unless they have a change of heart here at the end of the season, or as the end of the season and the new league year gets started here in the next month. I was always a proponent of, if you want to cut him, that is fine. I know Andy Herman wrote a great story about how maybe it was more financially prudent to do so. But I also understand not wanting to pay him. I think in essence it would have been like $9 million to either play for somebody else, and then you add in, well, the situation the Packers are currently in is that if they cut Jimmy Graham, there's no tight end on their contract other than Robert Tonyan. So you're probably going to sign a veteran, in which case you're going to be paying, let's just say you sign a veteran for $5 million. Now you're paying $14 million to the tight end position, and only one of those guys that you're paying that $14 million to is playing for you. So I think from just a football standpoint, taking the financials out of it, it was probably better for the Packers to give Jimmy Graham one more shot in a new offense that maybe is better for tight ends, will put him in a better position to succeed and get a chance to grow with Aaron Rodgers. Because the reality is you don't want – I mean, in essence, it would have been Robert Tonyan and probably either rookies or mid-level bargain basement-type free agents playing that position. So nobody great. Maybe people with a chance of being great, but the tight end position isn't one that lends itself to a rookie contributing a lot early on. There's a lot – that goes into playing tight end. You're talking about run scheme stuff before you can even get into the pass catching portion of those games. There's a lot going on there, and I know there's some great tight ends in this year's draft class. I am doing the scouting reports for the Cheesehead TV draft guide on the tight end class, so you're going to hear a lot about Noah Fant and TJ Hockenson, both from Iowa, Irv Smith from Alabama, Caden Smith from Stanford, Isaac Nauta from Georgia. I mean, there's a lot of players in this class that will be contributors to Green Bay at some point if they choose to draft them. I just don't think it's going to be in 2019 if they were to do that. So maybe there's no good answer, no right answer, so to speak, but I don't think that the answer the Packers gave is a bad one, that they can try one more time with Jimmy Graham, and it really lends themselves really well financially if they can just dump him after this year, if that's the case, unless Graham has this huge renaissance year that forces the Packers to keep him for a third year. I suppose that's possible as well. But, Zach, I mean, what are your thoughts? Jimmy Graham really struggled. I mean, I know his numbers aren't that bad, but you could tell that I just don't know if he was ever comfortable. There were so many almost plays that he made, but he never really made any great big plays down the field. What are your feelings in general about Jimmy Graham coming back for one more run?
Pretty big fan of it, and I was hoping that they would do this because, you know, Robert Tonyan would have been the only tight end under contract. Mercedes Lewis is a free agent, Lance Kendricks is a free agent, and you bring back a veteran who gets to, like you said, work in a new offense, get another year to mesh with Aaron Rodgers, and also, as you alluded to as well, they can dump him after the season if, you know, he doesn't perform up to par with their standards, what their expectations are, with very little cap consequence. So, you know, I'm still relatively in the camp of hoping that they draft a first-round tight end. I know that's probably slowly but surely becoming kind of like a preference amongst a lot of people. But, you know, that number, that 30th overall pick, they can do a lot. They can get really flexible. And if they really want someone like maybe TJ Hockenson, if they want to, you know, take that Iowa product, they can go for it right there if he's available. Or because it is such a deep class, they can wait and take Irv Smith Jr. in the second round or Caleb Wilson at some point. You know, they can afford to pass up on that first round tight end. Maybe stock up on the offensive line, take Dalton Reisner at 30. They can do whatever they want to do there. But I'm just hoping that they do something with the defense at 12. But that's another story. Yeah. Bringing Jimmy Graham back, that also gives, if they do draft a rookie tight end, that gives them kind of that veteran guy who provides somewhat of a learning curve. for a young guy in a locker room like that, you know, and eventually groom him maybe to become a starter at some point. You know, it's just, it's the nature of being passed down, passing the torch. And granted, the guy's been around for as long as he has, that's the perfect guy to do it. And in the meantime, you can get someone who could probably still play a serviceable role in a new offense under Matt LaFleur. You know, Mike McCarthy isn't there anymore, so you don't got to worry about, you know, tight ends being misused or striking out on a free agent tight end, because they've done that for, what was it, 3 years now? 3 years in a row?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm tired of the free agent tight end experiences or experiments. I've had it. You know, I want to draft that young, early round tight end, get Aaron Rodgers a young, athletic weapon, guy that he hasn't had since JerMichael Finley, and let him work.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I know I don't want to say they struck out, I guess, on Jared Cook. They just didn't bring him back. But I don't think that's what you were saying.
Jared Cook, he's, I don't know. That situation is a little weird, because obviously he had the ankle injury for a large part of the season. He didn't really get going with Rodgers till late in the year.
That's true, too.
Everyone remembers that big catch he had, you know, in Dallas, but he didn't really provide any impact plays during the season or any memorable moments outside of that one. You know, he wasn't that big dynamic tight end that stretched the middle of the field, you know, consistently, week to week. You know, the Packers haven't had that in a long time, and I don't think Jared Cook was that.
No, you're not wrong. The Packers haven't had a consistent, reliable tight end since JerMichael Finley was around. And I know a lot of people want to scoff at that and say, well, JerMichael wasn't reliable. Yes, he absolutely was. He's the franchise leader for single-season receptions for a tight end. And that's in a year. I mean, there's jokes about his drops. People don't like him. That's fine, whatever. JerMichael Finley was a stud when he was on the field. For those of you that want a preview of the Cheesehead TV draft guide, it's February 2nd, right now. If the Cheesehead TV draft guide came out tomorrow, I'm going to cheat a little bit. But I would have Noah Fant from Iowa as tight end 1. TJ Hockenson is tight end 1A, because really I think they do different things, but I can't distinguish them enough to have a clear cut ahead. I don't think that you can go wrong with either guy, and Irv Smith would be a small drop, but he would be tight end 2 or 3, I guess, in this case. I like all those guys. I think they're probably all going to end up being top 50 to top 60 prospects by the time I put my board together and everything like that. Zach, you mentioned the draft. Again, it's February 2nd, but if I was polling Twitter, I would be willing to bet. It seems like, in general, the Packers fan base has a consensus now on their hands of they want an edge rusher at 12. Most people seem to say that's Ja'Kai Polite from Florida. And then at 30, the popular name is Dalton Risner, which I completely understand that as well. My advice to everybody is, again, don't get married to one prospect, because you really set yourself up for disappointment when you do that. And there's so much that can change between now and, you know, draft day, which is, you know, a little less than 12 weeks away at this point. That's a lot of time. I mean, for the Packers to be locked in on just one guy, that would be foolish, I think, to be locked in on two guys. I mean, obviously there's guys I like too. I mean, if at the end of the day that they're, you know, if they pick Ja'Kai Polite at 12 and, you know, Dalton Risner at 30, I'm doing backflips. I mean, I'm really happy with that result. But I'm also happy if it's, say, Cleveland Farrell at 12 and TJ Hockenson at 30 or Noah Fant at 30. I mean, there's so much that can happen between now and that draft. So, but it is interesting to me how it has essentially become a consensus. I think more people are kind of not moving off of Risner, but if it's not Risner, they want TJ Hockenson or one of those tight ends at that 30th overall pick. But there's a lot that could change between now and then. Free agency is obviously going to come into play at some point for what the Packers are going to do in the draft. But there's a lot between now and then. We will have that for you all off season long. We are out of time for now. Zach, it sounded like you were trying to jump in there. Do you have any closing thoughts before I close this out here?
No, I'm good.
All right, so we are good. Thank you guys for listening to the Pack-A-Day podcast. Go ahead and grab a...
Wait, actually...
There we go.
We had a retirement this week.
We did.
Yeah, that's where you jump in.
Oh, Well, that name escapes me. I have pregnancy brain. Excuse me. So help me out. Oh, that's right. No, the name does not escape me. It was Julius Peppers. That's right. Julius Peppers played 3 years in Green Bay. Big play machine while he was here. Sacks, forced fumbles, two pick sixes in 2014. One of my favorite players in the history of the NFL that I have been able to watch. He is. I have been near a lot of professional athletes in my time. Julius Peppers is far and away, to me, the most impressive physical specimen I have ever seen up close and personal. He's built like a basketball player. From a height standpoint, he has long arms, huge hands, and he runs like a deer. And that was late in his career when I saw him in Green Bay, obviously. I would have loved to have been able to see him up close when he was in his prime in Carolina or even some of them early Chicago years. I was unable to do that, unfortunately. But, yes, appreciation to Julius Peppers, a first ballot Hall of Famer. Zach, you saved me there. So what are some of your thoughts on Julius Peppers hanging him up?
Like you said, he was just such an impressive specimen in multiple facets. He was just an incredible player to watch, and it was great that he was able to come to Green Bay. And, you know, it was crazy that they actually signed him during the Ted Thompson era. You know, doesn't seem like a very Ted Thompson signing, but that fell into the kind of like the Charles Woodson umbrella. You know, it seemed like that kind of free agent pickup. But yeah, you know, like I tweeted. I tweeted on the day he retired, you know, he was just a quiet, what did I say? Whatever I said, he was just a quiet psycho on the field, you know, he got on, he did his job, and that was that, you know. I don't think I ever saw him showboat, like, excessively. You know, obviously you have celebrations every now and then from players, but he didn't, like, rub anything in anyone's face. He was respectful to Rodgers when they met again in 2017 when Rodgers came back with a collarbone injury. And, you know, he was just – I like to compare him to players like Donald Driver, Andre Johnson, guys like that who are just, you know, quietly just freaks, you know. They're just generational players that don't say much. They let their play do the talking. He was one of those guys.
Yeah, Peppers was definitely one of those guys, a quiet, generational player, one of the best I've ever seen, a first ballot Hall of Famer, no question. So, Julius, if you are listening, kudos to you. Congratulations on a great career. I really wish that the Packers could have gotten you a Super Bowl in those 2 years that we played for the NFC title while you were here. That was one of the unfortunate parts, obviously, of losing those games. But now we have the end of our show. Give us a rating on Packaday. Please be kind, because today I've already screwed a couple things up, so I apologize for that. But give us a rating. Find your favorite podcast and download our podcast, subscribe to the show, all that sort of stuff. Follow the show. It's on at Packaday Podcast on Twitter. You can follow Zach Jacobson at?
Zach A. Jacobson.
And that's Zach with a C-H, not a K.
Yeah, thank you for clearing that up for me.
Yeah.
Find me at Cheesehead TV as well.
That's right. And you can find me. I am at Jacob Westendorf. You can find me. I seem to have a podcast every single day for this offseason. Packers War Room has started back up with Ross Uglum and Cody Bauer. Pulse of the Pack still rolling. I'll still be doing Packaday stuff with Zach every week. It's going to be a fun offseason. And then the Cheesehead TV draft guide is going to hit the stores. I'll be doing tight ends. There's a lot of great people doing a lot of great things. Check that out. Thank you guys for listening on Super Bowl Sunday. Enjoy the game tonight. And I'm pretty sure you're all rooting against the Patriots, so I'm just going to say this. Go Pack. Gotcha.
Third and six, trailing 30-23. 2 minutes straight up to go in the game. San Francisco showing a blitz through the A-gap, and here they come. Rodgers looking. Throws left side of the end zone.
Yes! Yes! Devontae Adams! Left corner of the end zone from Aaron Rodgers! 16-yard touchdown pass. The Packers an extra point away from getting this game tied.
Beathard on third down and three in the shotgun. Football to the 46 at Green Bay. Packers showing a blitz, and here they come. Beathard looking. Hit as he throws it. Deep down the right sideline. And intercepted on the play. Spectacular interception by Kevin King at the 9-yard line of Green Bay. Snap to Rodgers looking right. Throws the right side. St. Brown makes the tackle. Nice reach. Oh, he reached back to gather it in using all 6'5 of his frame, tumbled out of bounds inside the 30 of the 28-yard line. Snap to Rodgers, looking downfield, throws the left side. Devontae's got it, out of bounds inside the 10-yard line. Oh my goodness, what a throw and catch. Again, they beat Maven down the left sideline. Hunter Bradley the snap, J.K. Scott down on one knee, arm extended. Here it is, placement made, kick is up. It is good!
It is good!
Mason Crosby delivers the dagger! One week after his worst day ever, he delivers the dagger tonight! And the Packers win 33-30. We'll be right back.